Welcome back, everyone, to another exciting episode of Toy Flavor Radio Soundtracks. We play all your favorite movie, anime, TV shows, and video game intros, middle, and ending background music. Along the way, we are going to both get to learn a little bit about the composers themselves and their history. Now, please don't forget to subscribe to our weekly show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, or pretty much anywhere you go to listen to your podcasts. Also, please give us your ratings and reviews. We'd love to hear from you. Giving us a review of the show helps everyone find us better, and we want to continue bringing you lots more of fun shows in the future. You can help build our tribe. So please take a little bit of time, like the show, follow us, leave a review, and share with your friends. Did you know we take requests? Follow us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, and you can post your soundtrack requests right there. Are you ready? Sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's episode on The Soundtrack Show.
Here at The Soundtrack Show, we celebrate the genius composers behind your favorite TV shows and movies. Sometimes, we need to go a little deeper. Toy Flavor Radio Espressivo are interviews with the people who make the background music come alive. Nico Fattese of We Talk of Dreams developed some of the intense and mesmerizing background music for the podcast industry's most popular true crime and thrilling stories out today. For this week's episode, we talk about his life, his process, and provides insight on how he started as a soundtrack composer for the booming industry of podcasts. Come listen in.
Well, what draws you to your music? What draws you to music?
It probably begins way, way back when I was a child. This sort of, when it comes to anything creative, they sort of say it's something you kind of do without realizing it. So whenever my brothers were in charge of the TV back when there was only like five channels on TV, or like my friends weren't playing out, this is going back when I was about six or seven, then I had this sort of Casio keyboard in my room. And I remember just sort of watching sort of like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Power Rangers and stuff, and then attempting to bash out on the keyboard upstairs. Mm-hmm. And it's probably just stemmed from that. I mean, I had all these sort of plans about what my life would be. And as you get older, you seem to change and your perception of what you want to do changes. But music's always just sort of been there in the background.
Interesting.
So,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So yeah, I was just saying. So yeah, it just basically stems from that. It's sort of just my go-to thing when I didn't have anything else to do would just be, all right, well, got a keyboard, I might as well just play this for a few hours.
Wow. Yeah. You know, a side question. Whenever I read about you, it says there's comments about you being a mathlete. What's that about?
Yeah, so math. So my sort of star subject at school was maths. Mm. It was a thing I could do without sort of thinking. But just to premise that, I'm really, really bad at anything that involves essays. So even though I'm good at maths, I'm really, really terrible at English or philosophy or history or anything that just involves writing. I can't do. But maths, yeah. So I was one of, if not the best person in my school. There was only about 250 people in my year. Mm. And this sort of pick you as their star pupil, as you will. So you're the person they'll send off the first sort of coursework or exam paper and say, this is what our school is capable of. Mm. And from that, they then start doing competitions with all the schools in the area. So like once a year, you pick your best math student. And then you all just do this sort of like, it's almost like a game show without the TV. You go to like a hall somewhere and then they just sort of present you with like 20 questions. Whoever gets the highest point, highest marks, then goes on to do sort of nationals. And then I imagine it goes on further than that. I never made it past the sort of county thing. But yeah, I mean, my excuse was I didn't want to be a nerd. But there were people who were just way, way, way better at maths than I was. But I think it's just because I was naturally drawn to arts rather than science. But yeah, I like calling myself an ex-mathlete because it sort of puts a line between my life when I thought I was going to do something math-related and then when I switched to doing something music-related.
Cool. All around athlete and talent. Nice.
I was always terrible at anything physical at school. And now that I'm older, I tend to take much better care of myself physically. And now into sports a lot more. But at school, I was the bottom set, lazy boy.
That's okay. It turns out you brought a talent to the world that we all appreciate. So it's okay. It's all right. What was your first soundtrack or song you heard that started it all for you?
So it depends which one will probably be first. It's hard going back that far. So the two biggest things as a childhood was video games and TV. So like Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon and all that. So it's a toss-up between either playing Pokemon, like Pokemon Red and the Game Boy, or probably something like reruns of like the 80s. I'm a 90s kid. I was born in 1990. But my earliest memories of TV is like Power Rangers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
So like, imagine those two conjoined probably gave me something that was a stem. But the first sort of music I remember really attaching myself to is, I'm not sure if you heard of it, Samurai Jack, which was on Cartoon Network over here.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I adore that show. That was just everything my childhood was. Mm-hmm. And then first proper game was probably Final Fantasy VII. I sunk a huge amount of hours because I could never finish it.
You too, right?
I would play it and play it, and then I'd get stuck at a part. And rather than just sort of like learning how to beat this boss, I'd say, well, maybe I did something wrong. So I'd start the entire game over again. And these are like good 30, 40 hour playthroughs. But as a kid, you don't sort of pay attention to that. You say, like, well, I'll just do it again and again and again.
Right.
And yeah. And because, especially Game Boy games and the early PlayStation games, the soundtracks are very, not monotonous, but they're replayed quite a lot. So they sort of stick in your head, and I think that's probably what
has
quite a good foundation in what I set up to do.
Right. I remember Samurai Jack when it first came out. The soundtrack just keeps you in there.
I found out it's like Will.i.am.
Yes.
Show. Yeah. It's yes. Amazing.
Wow, and I didn't know that until recently. That was incredible. So after that one, what was your first sold?
The first sold one, I have to think back. So this would be 2016, 4 years ago. Legends, Myths, and Whiskey podcasts. Tanner Campbell was the first one who gave me my first sort of paid gig, as it were. Nice. And with Legends, Myths, and Whiskey, it was basically you pick your favorite whiskey, you drink your whiskey, and then you tell folk tales. So tales from around the world. So 1 week would be sort of like Japanese and Chinese ancient myths. And then next week we'd pick a different country and we'd do like Norway or Sweden and so on and so forth. So every week, start fresh slate, you sort of research as much as you can about the culture within that small time frame, which is crazy thinking back at it now, but we did it. And then through the powers of the internet and the computers, I'd find sort of like their culture's instruments. So like hurdy-gurdies to shamisens and whatnot. It's not a complete replica because like lots of instruments that were around 400 years ago just don't exist today. They've evolved. But that was my first paid gig. And what I loved about it is that because it changed so much week on week, you never felt like you're doing the same thing. It's just like, you just sort of wake up, it's like, yep, I'm going to try and attempt this today. And I won't say I was able to give you real authentic Japanese music or Norwegian music, but I tried my best to appreciate as much as I can with it. But the first person in podcasts which pretty much stemmed everything was Daniel Foytek, who does The Lift and The Wicked Library. Mm-hmm. I was looking up video game soundtracks at the time and I couldn't find any, but there was this Facebook group and he just posted in, he was looking for music for his podcast. And it's sort of like, no one's getting paid, but if you want to join in, feel free. Right. And that's my first entry into it. And that's, I think I included it. Yeah, it is. The Lift outro. in one of the three songs I gave you. That's the first ever song I did for as a soundtrack for someone else.
That is so cool. That is so cool. How did it feel when you first produced that and, you know, heard the world listening to your music?
Amazing. It's hard to describe. So the way my music career started is I did a lot of high school bands, which fails. And then I grew up in Lancaster, which is sort of Northern England. And then I moved to Glasgow in Scotland. And I did a lot of sort of open mic nights, sort of like you rock up to a bar with a guitar and you just sort of sing your heart out. Failed a lot, both of them. Kept failing. And I basically had this moment where I was like, well, what am I going to do in music? And I basically just went back and played all my favorite games as a kid and all my favorite TV shows and tried to figure out what it is that made me happy. And I realized I don't like writing music about myself, but I love writing music about something else, something I can attach. I can sort of world build with it. So that's how it started in the soundtracks. And then Daniel Foytek doing that and me realizing I'm actually writing something that's actually going to be heard always gave me sort of, what's the word? Stage freeze? When you freeze on stage, yeah.
Yes, it's different.
And even though you're in a room and you're doing it by yourself and like it's not live in any shape or form, but like you sort of like, I remember going through, I was a waiter at the time and I do like a 50 hours a week doing shifts and I come back and then I sort of working it 3 hours a night for about a month and got to a point where I was really, really happy with it. Not really knowing what I was doing, by the way. You just sort of guess your way through when you first start out. Sent it away, and the amount of joy that comes from hearing it in like a finished show is unparalleled, to say the least. I would happily do it even if there wasn't an audience there, but to have an audience there and to actually get feedback back saying, "Wow, I really like what you're doing," is just it was almost like being accepted for the first time, even though corny as that sounds.
No, that's exactly it. Exactly. When you get the proper feedback from people who actually do appreciate what you're trying to do. And, you know, it's a connection. That must have been really a proud moment for you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was like the everything just turned up the wick from that. Because I've dropped out of uni because I was doing maths. I didn't want to do maths anymore. I dropped out of uni and went into restaurant work for 6 years and then I released this track and then I basically said I can do this, and I remember driving back to my parents' house 2 hours away and basically saying, look what I can do, please can I move back in whilst I try again a new career, and they very thankfully said yes, and because of that I was able to then become financially independent being a composer. And sometimes I wonder what would have happened if it wasn't Daniel Foytek who gave me that first chance. Because you always sort of, you don't know what the industry is until you go for it.
Right.
So I had all these barriers and all these walls thinking, oh, what is it actually going to be like? How do I get in? And I'm so very grateful that Daniel gave me this chance. And yeah, everything just started from there.
That's amazing. I tell you, in any art field, it's always the same thing. People try, they hit the walls, they stop. If it wasn't for the fact that you kept going, these connections brought you to where you are now. And let that be a lesson to all you other artists out there, composers or otherwise, never stop what you're doing, because that one time you stop is that connection you missed. And then you're like, you know, the rest of us out there still working and wondering what if. Hey, before we continue, I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to ask more questions with Mr. Nico Vitesi.
Very nicely done.
Thank you very much. And this is the Toy Flavor Radio Soundtrack Show. We'll be right back.
Tonight's episode is sponsored by Apple and a Peach. Upgrade your everything with unique handmade soap and original artistic home conversational pieces. Visit appleandpeach.com, a little bit of New York in the heart of Georgia.
Well, we're back, and what you just heard was from Nico's composer of the Lift. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how you got that particular track created?
Yeah, so the Lift, to give a brief background of the story, is about this Victorian girl who, it sounds sad, but this Victorian girl who died, but her spirit is still trapped within a building. And she sort of works as like a purgatory. So people come in at a stage in life where there's a choice whether you're going to do the good thing or you're going to do the bad thing. Mm-hmm. And she sort of sends them almost like, kind of similar to like a Christmas carol. She sort of shows what happens, which choice you make. And depending how the story plays out, she's either going to be really nice to you or she's going to be absolutely awful to you. And she has like almost like a hell at the basement, or she has like nicer outcomes. But with the music and the feel in general, basically we said we wanted something similar to Doctor Who, whereas you can watch one episode in any order and you can understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. You don't have to watch the whole thing. But with the music and the soundtrack, we wanted something that sounded quite old and possessed, but not in a sort of horror way. More like, how to describe it? It's more like you can feel a presence, creatively speaking. So Victoria has this music box. That's how she, I don't want to give away spoilers, but the music box is very much attached to her. So it had to have a music box in there. And that was all I was given to go on. So basically for a month, I did a lot of sound hunting. I use Logic Pro, my digital audio workstation, and it comes with a lot of preset sounds. And no joke, I went through every single sound one by one and go, yes, no, yes, no, maybe.
Wow.
And you kind of sort of narrow it down and narrow it down and narrow it down. And then at the time, I couldn't really read music or that well play the piano, but I sort of did the same thing again. You set a piano bench and then you just sort of play notes, and after a good few days, weeks, you sort of come up with a melody. And then slowly it pieces together, very, very, very slowly. I'm quicker now. But it's almost like, it's sort of like a lightning bolt moment when it happens. You know when it's right, but until you get it right, you sort of, it is very much staring at a blank wall and thinking, I have no talent whatsoever, until it hits. And it's like, oh yeah, then it's that. And the annoying thing is, once it hits, you can finish the whole song in like 30 minutes, send it off, and then it's done. But it's just getting to that moment.
Mm. Yeah, I've listened to quite a few episodes of The Lift, and your music is the series.
Thanks.
You are very, very talented. So to our listeners, you must get a chance to listen to Victoria's Lift. Brilliant stories, backed by Nico's brilliant soundtrack. What was your earlier and current inspiring soundtrack composers?
So I'm terrible when it comes to TV. I'm terrible at remembering names, but no. Samurai Jack, obviously. I'd be a lie if Dragon Ball Z didn't play some form of part in it, because I watched so many episodes of it.
Mm-hmm.
But actual soundtrack composers that I know the names of are more or less game composers. So you have Nobuo Uematsu, which did the Final Fantasy series.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Wintory, who did a game called Journey a few years back, and he also did, my name's bringing a blank now, he also did Flower. He's a BAFTA-winning composer. He was the first one to win a BAFTA for games, if I remember correctly. And his soundtracks are just beautiful. The games themselves are beautiful, but the way he sort of can make these huge orchestral scores for something like a video game is just astounding. And then the other composer who would say has probably had a huge inspiration on me is Joe Hisashi. I'm probably saying that wrong.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah, I know it. It's hard to explain.
The Studio Ghibli movies.
Yes.
Yeah. Ponyo, My Neighbor Totoro, Howl's Moving Castle, and Spirited Away. Oh, I'm Princess Mononoke.
Oh, yeah.
I've got all the time in the world for the Studio Ghibli movies. Yeah. If you know, you know.
Exactly. You know. Exactly. And I am notorious for mispronouncing the Japanese names there, but excellent soundtracks from Studio Ghibli. But of course, no more. I don't have to emphasize more on that, that's for sure.
Yeah, the thing what I really love about the way that Joe Hisaishi does it is that he does use a lot of instruments and a lot of color in it. But if he did everything on a piano, it would still sound different for every movie. He's very much a, it's probably the wrong word, but very traditional composer, which is something I aspire to get to in my journey one day.
Well, that day's coming soon, apparently. I mean, you're really good at what you do. And having said that, have you worked on any soundtracks for film?
Not yet, but it is probably the next stepping stone. But I'd say probably what I want to do first is do... It's probably obvious now, but I want to hit into video games. Mm-hmm. So I think, whilst I love podcasts, and podcasts has given me so many avenues to go down, I want to start composing for different platforms, as you will. So I'd say video games is probably the next step for me. Mm-hmm. But of course, I think everybody dreams of hearing the music on the big screen.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one day I'd love to. But having that or doing like a Netflix series will be, I imagine, is amazing to do as well. But yeah, not done it yet.
Well, you see, the work you're doing, especially into in podcasts, you're starting to make those connections too. It's just a matter of time. I absolutely know that. Do know that you did work on at least, was it two video games you worked on?
Yes. So the nature with video games, especially in the sort of indie place of video games, is that there's a lot of startups, mm-hmm. But the process is very, very long, and I'd say probably like 19 out of 20 games probably never make it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Daniel Foytek gave me my first start into podcasts, but sort of a few weeks ago, I got involved with two video games. One was a space exploration called Distant Suns, which I think is still in development.
Wow.
But I imagine it's not going to get released for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was called Nekodama Catastrophe, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
That one, unfortunately, never got past the concept art stage.
Oh, man.
I actually have full soundtracks completed for them, but because I created four of those video games, I almost feel like I'd do a disservice if I use that music for anything else.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, before I was trying to figure out what music I was going to be making, I played a lot of video games whilst I was being a waiter. Like, I remember... It's funny looking back at it now, but it was a very confusing time because sort of like all my friends went to university, mm-hmm. and they all graduated and they're all computer scientists or geographers, or they're all very, very good at what they're doing at the top of the field. And it came a point where it came to graduation. I was a dropout and they graduated and they came onto these big, they started working for these massive companies and they're doing sort of a wife and two kids sort of thing. And then I was sort of like going the other way of being almost starting again, mm-hmm. Working as a waiter and then coming back to this dingy apartment and trying to figure out. And I remember it was probably like a good 2 years of just sort of like Groundhog Day where I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. So the only thing that really changed from day-to-day business was me playing music on a piano or an iPad at the time, mm-hmm. and what game or TV show I was watching. And I think... that did a lot of groundwork for what I became. But at the time, you don't really see it that way. You just sort of say, well, this is what I'm doing whilst I try and figure out what I want to be.
Right, this is the struggle.
Yes, it were. But it was almost like I didn't have a plan. I just sort of remember thinking, I don't want to do anything with maths, and I just dropped out of uni. And looking back at it, I am so lucky that it worked out. Yeah. But, yeah, I do... I do think about it all the time because it keeps me grateful and thankful and humble for what I do now, because there was a time where I didn't think I'd ever make it, as it were.
Wow.
Sorry, that got deep.
No, it's fine. And you know, and it's beautiful because you are inspiring, not definitely inspiring me, but you're inspiring our listeners who want to follow in your footsteps. Like, how do you get from A to excellence? You know? And there's that big, wide gap in between. And I thank you for sharing that because it encourages all of us. Right? Thank you.
Thank you.
You produced quite a bit of music for podcasts, the Red Wing podcast, Legends, Myths, and Whiskey, Victoria's Lift, and other soundtracks for Wicked Library. Who have I missed?
So at this point, I had to go back and count them, but at this point I've worked on about 70 podcasts now.
Woo!
Over four years, which I didn't realize it was so big until I went back and literally counted them. But the biggest sort of, I do a lot of different genres in podcasting. You've got the audio drama podcast, which are most of what you've just talked about there. But the biggest one I do is Shadows at the Door, which I do with Mark Nixon. And it's British horror, which I love to do. But it's very much ambient. So the difference between the lift and this is that music isn't the entire underscore. I probably do maybe like 10 minutes of music per 40-minute episode. And a lot of it is just Foley work sound effects. And it's like a really slow burn into it. But I do a lot of true crime podcasts, simply because true crime is the biggest, by far, the biggest genre of podcast there is out there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them. And then a lot of podcasts I sort of, I do sort of like the intro for, and then there won't be any music. So things like gardening podcasts, or I've worked with Dell. I've done a lot of sort of like Visit Maine, sort of like Visit This Place podcasts.
Okay.
Where you just sort of like do like a little 60-second thing, and then it ventures in, which I really quite like because it's whenever you're doing anything creative and art-like, you tend to always be working with people who are also artistic and creative and just in a different format. So you've got voice actors or you've got illustrators or whatnot. It's really, really fun working with someone who's really, really passionate about what they do. Like when they're making podcasts and they're really into what they're doing, but they don't know how to, they don't know the terminology or how it's meant to sound, how they want it to look, how they want it to sound. And humbling is not the right word, but something like that. When you work with someone and you're helping them create the vision, the world they want to build.
Gotcha. You're providing that puzzle piece that they're missing.
Yeah. And it's almost like the early days when I started writing music, there's a lot of, no, that isn't right. But I think it's getting closer and suddenly it'll click for them. And then you're like, oh, is this what you want? And then you can just hone in and do it all. Yeah, that's why I really love podcasts, because a lot of the time it's independent people doing it, and the budgets may not be there and the audience may not be there, but the passion, the idea is there, and I feel like that idea you don't really see reflected in these sort of other mass bigger industries, because there's too many people working on the same thing. When it's just one person, you're getting like the true picture of what they wanted to create, as it were.
Mm.
So yeah, that's what I like about podcasts.
See, there is a definite connection that you're fulfilling to a lot of people, and I tell you, I've been doing the soundtrack show since last year September, and I've been time and time again, I'm saying that the music, the background music is another character. It's a character of its own. It helps the story along, and that is what your music has successfully done for a lot of people.
Thank you. And yeah, I was listening to a lot of the Toy Flavor, and I didn't realize how big a connection to music. Like a lot of like TV themes and stuff, you instantly like transported back to when you first watched that show. I didn't realize how powerful it was.
Oh yeah,
so I started listening. Yeah.
It's a little too powerful. I gotta pull out sometimes. I'm like, whoa, back in 1980. Oh no. Hey, we're gonna take a quick break. We are on The Air with Mr. Nico Vitese, soundtrack composer, a brilliant young man who has some of the best music in podcasts, true crime, video games, and forthcoming film real soon. This is the Toy Flavor Radio Soundtrack Show. We'll be right back. Speaking with Mr. Nico Vitese, soundtrack composer. And my question for you is, what is your process when starting a composition for the first time? How do you connect with a story?
So this is something I've never actually shared before, and it's going to sound weird, so bear with me. But back when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, there was this really old Will Smith interview where Will Smith, the actor, that is, and this is sort of around the time he was making The Pursuit of Happiness and £7. And he talks about his sort of how he goes about acting, how he goes about the roles he plays. And he sort of said it's never really about acting, as it were. What he does is he places himself in that situation of the character he's playing. And then he just sort of does the actions as if it were himself. Mm-hmm. And that's how, in a sort of brief sense of how I go about the music, and it's why I love composing for things other than myself. So whether it's like podcasts or video games or whatnot, I put myself into the place of the characters I'm listening to, or the world I'm building, and I just sort of think, how would I be feeling at that moment, or what have you? And I never really feel like, once you get into that stage where you sort of really understand the world you're in and you understand the characters, the music's, I find the music just sort of almost appears to you. It's sort of like I keep saying, like it's that lightning bolt moment. You sort of know what's right and what's not. And it's not really about trying to find to do something new, but it's trying to find something that's serving the world you're in. Mm. And 9 times out of 10, it actually is going to sound new, even though it doesn't feel like it whilst you're writing it.
Right.
Because obviously there's only one me, and then if I'm placing myself in a world that's not really existed yet, and yeah. But that's the process I go about. I try my very best to try and keep it as real and as honest as I can be, even though it's just music and not actually speaking. But yeah, that's my process. And then obviously you need to learn stuff. Like I've been learning my scales, and I learn chord structures, and then I sort of know which instruments go together. And then with podcasts, because it's very narration heavy, you can't be too melodical in places. You can do it at certain points when it's like a really important part of the story, then you can. You kind of sort of have to factor that in. So I'll create like a suite, which is basically one project, and it'll have like lots of little snippets of ideas. So like I have like a 6-second guitar piece, and then it'll be a piano piece and whatnot, and then from that you sort of like piece it together, and you think how you're going to make that into a sort of 30-40 minute score for the whole podcast episode or whatever it is.
Right.
And yeah, that's my process.
Awesome. Wow. You know, the creativity behind that, if I was writing up, let's say doing my own true crime, and I have hired you to work with one of the production, I couldn't imagine finally find someone like a kindred spirit who knows knows what I'm looking for. You know, it's so hard to find other people who understand your art. But then here comes Nico. It's like, yeah, I got you. I know what you need. That's beautiful. Coming in from the break, we played Growing Up, a track that you composed. Where was that from, and how did you get that one done?
So this is one of the tracks I've done for myself, which is, I don't do that often. But basically what I've been doing recently is that I've been wanting to, as I get older, I've been wanting to sort of track what I'm doing at certain points in life, almost like a diary. Mm-hmm. And I hate reading back whatever I've written. I'm not a good writer, and I hate that, writing a diary. But I found when I look back at the music I've written, it's very much like a gateway into, I remember everything I was doing at that point. So I remember everything I did when I first wrote the Lift's outro music, and that goes on because I've written maybe 70, 80 hours of music at this point. And I can sort of, I very much remember exactly how I was feeling at that point and where my worries were, what I was trying to say. And from that, I realized I've got to start keeping track of my life. So this year especially, I've just basically doing what I call diary entries. And I just basically write like a little 60-second song where I just sort of like dump all my emotions out and then create a little song out of it and release it. And so when I look back, I can understand where I was at that point. So Growing Up was a song I wrote of January this year. And yeah. Basically, it's me sort of like keeping up. It sounds corny and really bad at sort of explaining my own music, but me trying to keep hold of my childhood as I get older. I'm turning 30 at the end of this year, and it's sort of reminding myself that even though physically I'm getting older, it doesn't mean I have to stop creating music that would be for children or a more innocent time or what have you.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Wow. That's all about that song.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. So in harmony with that question, have you produced any non-soundtrack related music, let's say an album or for commercially for yourself?
There's a lot of stuff I did in high school which wouldn't really count because it was me just sort of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. But what I've always wanted to do, and I'm still trying to figure out how to do it, is I'm a huge fan of spoken words. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
Oh, yeah.
Spoken word poetry, I adore. And one of my hobbies that I do when I'm not creating music for anything that I say is part of my job, I love what I do. It's not really a job, but anything that's not for someone else, what I do is I tend to look up spoken word artists on YouTube, and then I sort of listen to it, I download the audio from that, and then I'll write music underneath. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like Humans of New York, but in speech form. And I've been trying to figure out how to make that work as an album. It's still a work in progress.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, that's something very much, I do it for myself and I will release it to the world, but it's one of those projects where I don't really mind too much about what the end goal is, and I don't really mind how many people it reaches. I just want it to exist.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I really look forward to hearing that when you finalize it. I would love to hear it.
Thank you. It may be you out, but yeah, I'll make sure.
Thank you. So tell us about We Talk of Dreams. How did it get started?
So the first thing I realized when I started making music commercially is that apart from yourself, very, very, very few people don't know how to say my surname or spell my surname. And because it's hard to say, it's hard to search it when you can't say it. Right. So like I realized I can't have Nico Vitese as my composer stage name, as it were. So I needed something else. We Talk of Dreams. This is corny and cheesy. So Romeo and Juliet, there's a character called Mercutio. And he's talking to Romeo. I think it's an act two, I can't remember exactly. But he's basically saying that people spend their whole lives dreaming and then not actually doing. And it has this huge speech about people who just get lost in yeah, just get lost in saying one day I'll become this or one day I'll find that. I never have acting. But I almost think the opposite of that. I almost think people get too lost in their day-to-day life that at some point they forget what they wanted to be. I still do it today. Everyone, it's still something we have to constantly fight against, but you sort of react to how the world's reacting to you, rather than it should be the other way around. You should be the person, you should be the thing that's creating something out of the world, and then the world should react to that.
Right.
And I find that people need to dream big. They need to see themselves successful in whatever field that may be. It doesn't have to be art. It doesn't have to be anything creative. It could be business. It could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
So long as you sort of let yourself see yourself that way. So even though it's just me, I like saying we talk with dreams because I like connecting with people and I want to help them achieve what they want to do, even though it may just be music that I give them. And yeah, that's where We Talk of Dreams came about, and it's sort of, I've stuck with it, and it's easy to remember, easy for people to say and look up, and yeah.
Hey, you know something? Yeah, that's wonderful. And I got to tell you this, though. Never be hesitant about those who need to pronounce your name, because you got Michael Giacchino out there. And it took me a while to figure. And in fact, if you go to his website, he'll tell you how to pronounce his last name. And, you know, he's a brilliant composer for a lot of the soundtracks out there in film. Wow. But you're a starting of We Talk of Dreams, and why you're doing it is admirable. Which can only make greater success for you when it comes to wanting to help people. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
What advice can you give for someone first starting out in music composition?
So when you first gave me this question, I think I knew what I was going to say for the other questions quite early on, but this one I had to really think about. I think I spent a week trying to figure out how to answer this question without it feeling too... You know, when you watch these sort of inspirational videos on YouTube, and it's sort of like, you can achieve anything so long as you put the work in, and this, that, and the other. To be very, very real, in music composition, especially the field that I'm in, It's very, very fierce. But if you have the right mentality, you can navigate it quite well. So I started doing this quite late compared to others. I was 24 and a half and 29 now. It's still relatively young in all things considered, but you've got people who've been doing this since they were sort of 10 years old. So you're sort of behind them. And then I realized my competitors, the people who would do what I do, are all university graduates. So they've got experience in film and TV. And when I first started, they just had a huge amount of previous projects and stuff. So I started thinking, how am I going to compete against that? Mm-hmm. The first thing I'd say is find a field that needs music, but no one else has thought of it yet. For me, that was podcasts. I mean, podcasts have been going on for a good 15 years, but musically, audio drama, like, it never really picked off until about 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I found it at the right time. So I'd say find a field that needs music, but doesn't realize it needs music yet. Mm-hmm. And something that your competitors, your other creatives haven't thought of. Immediately, that just gives you, one, it gives you an upper hand, because then you're the person, you're the first name in that field, but it also gives you sort of a stomping ground, as you were, something that you can learn whilst you're doing.
Right.
Second point is, leads into that, learn whilst you're doing. Because I already went to university once, I couldn't go again without having to pay upfront.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to self-study. I'd say learn as much as you can, but don't get too bogged down that it stops you doing. Because there's a whole, imagine the same with any sort of fields, there's so much theory involved that you could get lost down a rabbit hole and then never come out. Sort of learn what you need to learn to do the job you have in front of you. Don't worry too much about having a more complete education. Because at this point, you're playing catch up, so there's not real much point trying to fit in a whole university degree wow, you're trying to do this. And the third thing I'd say is believe that you can. There's no one there with a sort of rule book telling you that you're doing it wrong. People only really care about the finished product. They don't really care about how you got to that finished product. Many a times the product that they're after you've never heard of before, or the music's never been made before. So I'd say just believe that you can, and then just sink all the hours in until you reach that point. I don't ever think when it comes to success, I don't ever think it's a person who studied the most or, you know, has had the most fears. I just believe it's a person who's believed they can. So I'd say, and it sounds cheesy, almost sounds like a Disney movie, but I honestly believe anyone at any wherever they are can be successful in an art field or creative field. You've got to sort of know how to navigate around it. Because I'm going to hold my hands up. I will never be the best composer. I know I'll be the most successful composer, this or the other, but I will be the best me.
Right.
And the further on your career you go, the more you realize who you are, and then the more unique your product gets. So it's a sort of win-win. You've got to sort of like take the hits now and then just go with it. Don't let people gatekeep. Don't let people stop you from achieving what you want to do just because you don't have the qualifications behind you or the experience. Just believe you can. Yeah, that's what I'd say.
Excellent. Thank you. See, these are the inspiring words of Mr. Nico Vitese. Thank you so much for that. I'm telling you, from what I understand, there's quite a few people listening to the show around the earth, and I'm sure a lot of them are wanting to get into the area that you have so successfully conquered. Like you said, 15 years ago, podcasting pretty much started really lifting off, and I would never have thought of composing strictly podcasting. Hey, it's yours. You own it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let that be a lesson to all of us out there who have something they want to contribute to the world. Most importantly, believing in yourself. That's true.
Oh, the other thing I would say, I just remembered now, is your personality is much more important than you think. How you connect to people and how, especially with podcasts, and the same with what goes for YouTube, you can't be an asshole, basically. You have to...
That's right.
You have to be nice. You have to really believe in what the person you're creating something with is, because that's how you get people coming back to you, because it's not only the art you make together, but because you're sort of, you're bonding with people, you're basically making friendships for life.
Right. And
yeah. Sorry, I remember that now.
Yeah, that should be underscored. Get into the field, love your art, but don't be an ass.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Nico Vitese, thank you so much for taking the time today to do this interview with us. I really do appreciate you.
And I really appreciate the opportunity as well. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. And that is it. Thank you for listening to the Toy Flavor Radio Soundtrack Show. This is Mr. Nico Vitese, brilliant soundtrack composer. And thanks for listening. Have a great week.